Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that will be decided inside an unforgiving steel cage. I'm one half of your wrestling educators, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the Bonesaw himself, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
Now look here, Andrew. You see, I got you for 3 minutes. Oh, yeah.
It's playtime.
It's playtime. Time.
No, I'm good, man.
I finally bought the PS4 Spider-Man game.
Oh, yeah.
I have not played much of it yet, but I'm going to be really upset if Bonesaw McGraw is not one of the
It's so good, man. I don't want to turn this whole episode into talking about how great that game was, but it was... It's like a fun game to play, of course. The mechanics are great.
Yeah.
But the story, honestly... It's like one of the best Spider-Man stories of any of the films, or like, it's so good. You're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit behind in my video game-ness. Mm-hmm. Chelsea and I were at the GameStop last weekend, and I went up to the counter with the Spider-Man game and with The Last of Us. And the guy who works at GameStop near us, who looks exactly like a friend of the podcast, Jordan Sarve, he just looked at me and went, "Oh, all right. I guess it's about time you play the best two games that the system has to offer." It's like, okay.
Well, I guess you guys finally got around to it.
I guess so. But we're not talking about Spider-Man. Or we might talk about Spider-Man a little bit later in this episode.
Maybe a little bit.
We're talking about cage matches on today's episode. This is one I'm really excited for.
Me too, yeah.
I think that this is a good entry point for new fans of the show. If this is your first episode listening, cage match is a great place to dive in, no pun intended. So that is going to be our word of the day. But first, we want to get through a little bit of news. And I guess we should start with the non-cage match stuff really quickly.
Yes.
Because we're going to be focusing on AEW stuff a lot during this episode. Let's go to the other side of the pond. It's not a pond. Let's go to Connecticut and talk about WWE for a second. NXT Portland was this past Sunday. It got rave reviews as like a show as a whole. People were kind of conflicted about what the best matches were and which matches were good and which matches were not. What were your takeaways coming out of it, Tyler?
I mean, as always, NXT is just so good. It's really unfortunate. And I said this when we found out that Dynamite was going to be on Wednesday and NXT was going to be directly competing with it. I've always enjoyed watching NXT. And I hate the fact that I have to choose between them on a Wednesday night, but it was they did a great show, man. They always put on incredible wrestling. I love NXT. It was super good.
I think that Dijakovac versus Keith Lee is my favorite match of the year, and I don't mean that the match that they had at NXT Portland. Just I mean that they've wrestled each other on TV maybe like 6 or 7 times now this year, and each time it's been fantastic. So I think that's my takeaway of NXT Portland. I feel like they burned through a lot of their big storylines right before WrestleMania, but I guess that they have some places to go yet with Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano.
And Gargano, places that we thought we had already been at, places we thought the door was closed.
But... So we'll see how they can deliver something new in that storyline.
And I have faith in those two that they can. Yeah. I think they can keep it fresh somehow.
They could put him in a steel cage. I guess they haven't done that yet.
That's true. They could put him in a steel cage.
So we think that that might end up on the NXT TakeOver Tampa Bay card. We also were starting to finally kind of have a picture of what some matches on the WrestleMania Tampa card will be. We've heard some rumors. Tonight, for all of you listening to the podcast, John Cena is going to return to SmackDown. Mm-hmm. That has been announced.
Big match John, he's back.
Yeah, big match John. The rumors that this is going to be to set up a match at WrestleMania against occasional match Elias. we've heard that that's the rumor through Dave and other mm-hmm. wrestling sources. What are your thoughts on that as a potential WrestleMania matchup?
I think I have faith in the two of them that it can be very entertaining. Honestly, I'm happy to see Cena back. It's weird, like you don't realize how much you miss someone until you're like, oh, they're coming back. Like, mm-hmm. man, I've missed some John Cena. I really have. He's just one of the best. He really is. And Elias is very entertaining. And the two of them have worked before, and I think that they could come up with something.
At
really
last year's WrestleMania. In fact,
was it last year's?
Yeah, right? Where John Cena came out as rapper
oh,
John Cena.
Oh, the Dr. Thugonomics, was that yeah. with Elias?
Yeah, he interrupted because wow. Elias was the host of WrestleMania.
Oh my God, you're right. And here yeah. I was about to pitch the Doctor of Thugonomics for this WrestleMania.
They could have done it. You would have loved it because you loved it last year.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't shock me if his return to SmackDown was to announce that he's going to be hosting WrestleMania this year, mm-hmm. and like that will lead into him having yeah. a moment with Elias.
I was gonna say, do you think he'll get a match or just a segment?
I feel like if it's Elias works better in a segment than he does in a match.
Exactly. But yeah,
I feel like there's not that many opportunities left of having John Cena wrestle at WrestleMania. That's so true. I would like to see him against somebody who he can more seriously push. Mm-hmm. Nothing against Elias. I love him, but Elias has a very specific purpose on the card. He is yeah. like the fool or the jester. And that's exactly. not what John should be really like pointing to. How disappointed will you be if his return to SmackDown is just to announce like, go watch the new WWE Network docuseries about the Ruthless Aggression Era starring
oh,
me.
Oh, what a waste.
Because that does exist now. That just went
That
up.
Does exist now. Yeah. I think they got a couple episodes out. I haven't watched any of it yet, but I've mm-hmm. heard people's reactions to it. And it's a very mixed bag from this is incredible, it's really well, to God, how many times can they tell us that they won the Monday Night Wars?
Like, well, yeah, I guess it starts right after the end of the transition from like the Alliance and the Attitude Era mm. into the Ruthless Aggression. So I guess like in that sense that they do have to start with beating WCW.
Yeah.
I'm curious to watch it too. I'm curious to see how they frame that era. Cause like what I think of the Ruthless Aggression Era, mm-hmm. what's like sticks out fondly to me is the SmackDown Six, the six performers
yeah,
who really true. Carried true. SmackDown for a few years in the early aughts when Paul Heyman was the head writer of the show.
Yeah,
the problem is it's really hard to tell the Ruthless Aggression story, and I think like WrestleMania 20 is like a big part of that era. It's yep. hard to tell it. Without,
I mean, you have to leave out one of the six.
Yeah, without talking about Chris Benoit, who, again, if you're a new listener, if you haven't listened to this, he legit murdered his wife and kid. And he's not someone that they bring up on WWE programming unless there's no way around it.
Well, they never mention the name. They'll mention matches that he was in, pay-per-views, things like that, but all without ever mentioning the name Benoit.
Yeah, so I'm curious to watch that series just to see how they
yeah.
edit around him.
But also, I mean, we know that WWE isn't opposed to making some revisionist history.
Yeah,
I know.
That's why. Yeah,
already I know one of the bigger gripes is about the World Wildlife Fund lawsuit.
Oh, they get the F out. Yeah,
well, they don't even really say that that's what happened. I'm pretty sure. and I might mess up the quote, but the quote was like, they're talking about like how they switched over, and they were like, and in a bold creative decision by Vince McMahon, he changed it from WWF to WWE.
In a financially needed decision.
Bold creative decision. I was like, I don't know if that's what happened.
Yeah. But see, I'm excited to watch it just because this will be the first one of these kind of documentaries that I can watch I have a very clear remembrance of living through that history, mm-hmm. and to see how different it strays from what I remember is going to be interesting. Speaking of gripes though, because I took us so far off of the point, is I know that the internet has the wrestling internet community has not been super thrilled with the idea of John Cena versus Elias. Mm-hmm. And I know that Dave Meltzer was one person who kind of was like, yeah, that does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Baron Corbin responded to Dave in a really aggressive way on Twitter and was like, Dave Meltzer is what is wrong with wrestling.
Wow,
and none of you know how to form your own opinions. You just like take whatever Dave says. And, I have been a really big fan of Baron Corbin this year. So I'm going to do a little experiment, and I'm going to stay off of the Squared Circle subreddit from now until the end of WrestleMania and see if I end up actually having wildly different opinions from like what the wrestling standard is. We're going to do a little experiment.
All right. All right.
In a sense. Yeah.
That's fair. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
We'll see how long I last before I have a bored moment at work and just go on to the
I just got to check in and see what's going on.
Yeah. The other rumored match is potentially AJ Styles versus The Undertaker. Is that an Undertaker match that you think could actually work in 2020?
Yes, because it's AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
And AJ Styles could make a match with a broom work. But is AJ Styles going to be good for Mania?
Yes.
How serious was that shoulder injury?
He separated his shoulder at the Royal Rumble, taking a spear from Edge. And he is going to be out for like another 2 or 3 weeks, basically.
Okay.
That is kind of the prognosis going around the web, which would not know of starting with tomorrow. Right away he was like, I promise you I'll be back for WrestleMania, which I think made the rumor mill start because he's like, it seemed that he knew exactly what his plan for WrestleMania was. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like if this match is 10 minutes or less, it could be pretty good, pretty fine and dandy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pumped for it. I think that's a matchup we've never seen, a matchup that I didn't know I wanted till just now. So
yeah, I think
it could be good.
I'm kind of done seeing The Undertaker face anybody who he's already faced before.
Yeah, that's exactly. Like if he's gonna keep wrestling matches when he arguably should be retired, like then give us some new stuff. Like I don't need to see Undertaker versus Triple H ever again.
No, but they're gonna try. So that's what we got for WWE news at the moment. But there was a big cage match that happened on AEW Dynamite on Wednesday. And we're going to start talking about this because it leads into our topic so well. So set the stage for us, if you will, Tyler. Who were the competitors in this cage match?
Oh, yes. The first ever cage match on AEW Dynamite. It was a barn burner. Mm-hmm. The heater, the big man, Wardlow, taking on, at this point, America's sweetheart, Cody Rhodes.
Mm-hmm. This was Wardlow's first match in AEW.
Yeah.
Question, Tyler, had you ever seen a Wardlow match before?
I have not.
Same here. He's relatively new to the wrestling scene.
How did you think he looked?
Certainly the TV. I thought he looked fine.
I thought he looked great.
He wasn't asked to do a whole lot.
No, but he the role that he had was the big dangerous man. He did excellent.
Mm-hmm. So this was the first cage match in AEW's short history. We got here in storyline where Cody, who was screwed out of his only title opportunity by his, at that time, best friend, MJF, we know what the MJ and F stand for.
Yes.
So MJF screwed him out. Cody wants to get his vengeance and fight MJF. He says, no way, except for under these three conditions. One of the conditions was that if Cody touches MJF physically, then he doesn't get a match. Mm-hmm. The second one,
a very, very common stipulation you'll see in professional wrestling.
The other two less common. The second was that MJF, was going to be allowed to whip Cody with a belt on TV, mm-hmm. 10 times, 10 lashes, which was a fantastic segment.
It really was. I was so skeptical about that, and it turned out excellent.
Yeah. So Cody got through those two levels so far. And this third one was, if you want to fight me, you have to fight my big heater, my enforcer, my muscle-bound freak, Wardlow, inside of a steel cage. And he did. It lasted about 15 minutes. It closed the show. Okay, before we even get to the match, this being the first steel cage that they've had, every company's steel cages look a little bit different. What did you think about the cage itself?
I liked it. It was slightly different from the standard. Standard just being what we're used to with WWE cage matches.
Like a chain link.
Yeah, exactly.
Mostly with like a tress at the top to hold it together.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But I was a fan. I liked it. We knew we weren't going to see like six sides or anything like that, so it was good. I immediately off the bat, I liked the rule change that they had of escaping the cage does nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's a very old school original.
Yeah.
We'll get into this history shortly, but that is kind of how the cage match was and its impetus.
Yeah, you know? Which honestly, I mean, I think I'm fine with that being the standard of saying, like, a cage match, the point of the cage match is not to try to get out, is to say that we're trying to keep you in so you can battle each other, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it always kind of didn't make sense to me that in WWE for the longest time, for years and years.
Since the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, for the longest time, like, I think they changed it in, like, the Ruthless Aggression era where you could win a cage match by a pinfall. But for the longest time, like, the only way to win was to escape it.
Yeah, if you play the very popular Nintendo 64 wrestling games, No Mercy, you can only win a cage match by climbing over the top of it, which is frustrating.
But I liked it. I thought it looked good. I thought it was good. A great start for AEW's cage match history, if you will.
There were two things I found interesting. I don't know if I like them. The first being that if you do a cage match on television, to communicate it to the audience at home, you either have to hide a cameraman inside of the cage, or you have to cut out a lens-shaped hole in the side of the cage so that a camera can have like an unobstructed view. And AEW didn't do that. They legit just kept the camera outside the cage and let every shot kind of be dominated by the chain link. And I thought I was worried about that at first, but I actually thought that was a pretty good choice in the end. I think that they were planning to rely on their standard turnbuckle remote control cams a lot. And in the first, minute, they cut to it, and the ring is shaking too much because of the cage. And, like, the one shot that we did see from the remote control camera was so, like, nauseating that I think they were like, okay, we're not going back to that.
Yeah. it was a little jarring at the beginning, like the first 30 seconds of, like, trying to see the action through the chain link, but very quickly you look past that.
Yeah. It just took a little bit of time to get used to.
And again, because it was that sense of this is very different from how WWE does it, I liked it. It was a unique aesthetic that you don't usually see that made AEW feel different.
Yeah. They did one other thing to make the cage feel different. I don't know if I love this. It was normally a cage either encapsulates the entire ring area, including the space between the ring and the audience, or it's incredibly tight and like hugs the apron. AEW's cage left a few feet between the apron
mm-hmm.
and the cage, which they called two on commentary as like, yeah. oh, well, there's room to like do more violence in between the ropes and the cage. I think it might actually be too dangerous, like not in a kayfabe way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could see someone taking a weird fall and like getting their leg caught. Like, yeah.
weirdly stuck or squished or something mm-hmm. in there. Yeah.
There was one time where Wardlow threw Cody, like lawn darted him, and mm-hmm. Cody fell like body first behind the ropes and immediately like rolled Ooh. Towards the ring as he was falling. And I wouldn't hate it if that went away the next time that they do a cage match.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that.
Could you tell us what the story of the cage match was? Because that is why I think this match was successful as like a TV main event. Mm-hmm. It was kind of perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great it's a traditional story you would see from a hot babyface and you know, very physically imposing heel. Wardlow took the upper hand fairly quickly. We got some blood fairly quickly.
A lot of it.
At this point, I'm convinced like Cody Rhodes is like the new like Ric Flair on that. He's just like, I'm gonna bleed every match then. Mm-hmm. All right,
got white hair and getting blood in it.
Got white hair. It looks great when there's blood in it. But yeah, so Cody got some color real quick. It was good. I even liked the outside storylines between Brandy and MJF and Arn.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little confused by the what was it? Like MJF was trying to talk up Arn to like slam the door on Cody or something.
Yeah. That was a direct reference.
Yeah. To like the Horseman days with or something like with like Dusty. But I was just mm-hmm. like, but he's on Cody, like why would he do that? Like,
yeah. You know, yeah, in the past in a cage match, Arn turned on Dusty.
Mm-hmm.
In a match that exact way by like slamming the door in the head.
Yeah.
And there was speculation online again, which I won't know starting tomorrow, where people thought that the match was going to end with Arn turning
on him, really.
And like in that direct reference. So I think they either AEW's creative team saw people talking about that and then wrote that in as a swerve mm-hmm. or that was just like a red herring.
Yeah. I like it more as that. If it was like I don't hate the idea of Arn turning on Cody, but it's way too early. It is absurdly mm-hmm. too early.
Yeah. I thought that there could have been a way that this ended with Cody winning the match and still breaking the first rule of like physically harming MJF and having the match called off.
Oh, really?
I still feel like that could happen
next week or
next
something.
Week. Yeah. Because that's the only rule we have not seen enacted upon mm-hmm. yet. But we'll see about that. What do you think of the final spot of the match?
Oh, I loved it. Also, I love that was the finish.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, I mean, even in you know, big gimmick matches like these, you rarely see a big spot like that that actually is the finish nowadays. Usually they'll hit the big spot and then somehow work around to hitting their finisher and then get the three or something.
Yeah.
But I loved that just the moonsault press off the top. That was it. That was all you needed.
Yeah. This cage also seemed taller than a WWE cage. So that mm-hmm. moonsault, that backflip from Cody off the top of the... It was a pretty brutal, like we've seen one of the big famous moments of cage matches is mm-hmm. a competitor missing a moonsault and landing face first mm-hmm. onto the mat. I actually think this looked even more brutal that he hit it.
Really? I thought it looked okay.
Like it looked more damaging to me. I mean, like for Cody to actually like hit another human body than to just hit the mat. Yeah,
that's fair. I like rewatching the replays and stuff. I do have to say that I think Wardlow like could not have caught him better. Like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
looked like it's, the yeah. perfect spot of like he caught him exactly on his shoulder how he's supposed to, but then also let him fall a little bit. It would, I'll give him that. It looked great.
I think that this was the best entry point as a main event for AEW so far for very casual viewers. I feel like if you were like waiting to see an episode of the Hot Ones game show and you came 15 minutes early and were like, oh, there's a cage match going on? Sure, I'll watch this. I feel like it was perfectly tailored to people who have not watched much wrestling, because there was what, like three wrestling maneuvers in that match?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of fancy stuff. Wardlow did hit a sweet Swanton bomb, though.
Yeah, and an F10, his
an F10
spinning version of Brock Lesnar's F5.
That's so great.
So we liked that cage match. We got so many cage matches to talk about. I don't want to like leave us off the beaten path here. So let's hop into our word of the day and talk about all things cage matches. Do you want to give us the definition of cage match?
Andrew, I would be happy to do
Yay.
So. The cage match, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. A wrestling match where the competitors battle in an enclosed cage to prevent escape or interference. This is the most historic and popular gimmick match in professional wrestling.
Yes. You don't have to know much about pro wrestling to know what a cage match is. I feel like if you ask a random person, tell me, like, word association, pro wrestling, they'd be like, Hulk Hogan, cage match.
Yeah. Even just hearing the term cage match, I feel like people are like, oh, that's a pro wrestling thing, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they've been saying it since June 25th, 1937, which is when the first cage match in pro wrestling history, the first recorded one in pro wrestling history, took place. This was in Atlanta, Georgia. The match featured a ring surrounded by chicken wire, which sounds incredibly painful. And that was in order to keep the athletes inside and any potential interference out of the action. And this was a matchup between Count Rossi and Jack Blumfeld, classic wrestlers of the 1930s.
I love that, Count Rossi.
I'm going to include, there's a photo of this match. I'm going to include it as the thumbnail for this episode so that you can see it too. Have you looked at this photo yet, Tyler?
I have not.
Do you have it? The link in front of you?
I will pull it up. Oh, here. I see you put the link. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
Because this cage is so far from the modern cage, it's pretty fun.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
I love that. It's because the cage is like inside the ropes.
Yes. It looks less like a pro wrestling cage. And it's kind of funny to me that the first cage match looks very similar to a UFC cage.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about how the cage has left pro wrestling and gone to other places in a bit here. So that was the first cage match. We already talked a little bit about what the rules are of a cage match, but let's go through them one more time. Like, how is a cage match different in a structural sense, pun intended, from a normal wrestling match?
Absolutely. So cage match, again, traditionally what we had known from WWE, cage matches, you would win them by escaping the cage. Originally, back in the day, this was could only be done by climbing over the cage.
Yeah.
They added the door stipulation later, which, I'll be honest, I've always hated that.
The door is tough to build drama around. There's inherent drama with someone climbing to a tall place. It's harder to make trying to walk through a door seem difficult.
I know, and I've always hated that because it never made sense to me. Why would anyone ever try to climb the cage when you could just walk out a door?
Yeah, like, and still people did it. What you're also describing is like the iconic 1980s blue cage,
Which is my favorite cage. Actually, I love that one.
It's goofy. It's not as tall because people had to climb out of it. And it has, it's like a grid more than like chain link. Like, it looks like a jungle gym. And I think that the idea
definitely
was that
easier to climb.
Yeah, it had to be reinforced for people like King Kong Bundy to be able to climb it, who were like 500 pounds. So I think that was the idea. So yeah, in WWE for a long time you could only escape, but before WWE and kind of post-80s wrestling, you could also win by a standard pinfall or submission. It was less about like using the cage as a weapon in a lot of senses. It was more about the setting of being locked in the cage, building the drama. Do you have a favorite? You said your favorite is the blue cage.
That's my favorite iteration of the cage itself. My favorite cage match probably. It wouldn't be one of those, but that's my favorite iteration of the cage. I just love the design. I think it's also a sense of like, were I ever in a cage match, I'd want that one because it's much easier to climb
as a performer. Way less dangerous. Like I, as a youth who was very into wrestling, anytime that I saw a chain link fence, I would try to climb it just to see like how
and that's
tough
not
it was.
Easy, man.
Yeah, it's hard. Do you have any other designs of cages that you think are good or bad? I guess we should say a lot of modern gimmick matches have evolved out of the standard cage match. Like without the cage, you wouldn't have War Games or Hell in a Cell, Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, absolutely.
Punjabi Prison.
I think we could have done without that one.
Yeah. I feel like there's a big one I'm forgetting.
There's
the dog
the
kennel
TNA,
from hell match.
There's the TNA matches, Lethal Lockdown. Mm-hmm.
That's a really slickly designed cage. The six-sided cage, I think, in contrast to the cage that we saw AEW have this week that was really loose, and when people hit it, besides really like were in motion for a long time, the six-sided cage felt very tight, which I guess was a part of the six-sided ring too and why wrestlers didn't like being in them. But I think that was also actually why in my notes I saw that was why WWF moved away from the blue cage to the kind of like the standard cage that we see today, which is the chain link with the truss at the top, because the wrestlers had complained about those reinforced blue bars like really hurting a lot for years. And the last match that WWE had with one of those cages, it was painted all black to be for the Attitude Era, and it was St. Valentine's Day Massacre, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon. And Vince took a bump off of that cage and then was like, we're not using that cage anymore. So it took the boss getting
boss,
hurt.
Yeah, to hit it himself and be like, this sucks. We're not doing this.
Speaking of sucks, what are your thoughts on the WCW Triple Cage of Doom?
So I'm going to be honest. I don't know what that is.
Well, you've seen the movie Ready to Rumble, correct?
A very long time ago, but I think I know what you're talking about.
if you're on the WWE Network, or if you just like Google Triple Cage of Doom, you'll see it. This is three cages built on top of each other with like roofs on them. It looks really like imposing, and it turns out it's really convoluted and tough to build a match around. It takes a long time to climb to the top of it.
So like War Games but vertical?
Yeah, it's like vertical.
Oh, wow.
it's like Bruce Lee in is it what, Enter the Dragon with the seven rooms? Okay. Where you climb the room. It's like The Raid, the movie, but like with way less action. That's kind of what I think. There's like three of them too. There's three of those matches to check out. David Arquette wins one of them. Spoiler alert.
Well, that sounds absurd.
Yeah. What stories are served most by a cage match? Because there was a long time in the 90s and 2000s where there were just cage matches willy-nilly. And I think that's where they started to kind of wane in their effectiveness. So for a cage match to be effective to the story that they're telling, what needs to happen, Tyler?
I mean, the best case scenario is a good old-fashioned blood feud. It needs to be two people who just hate each other so much that you can't contain the violence that they're inflicting on each other. So you have to literally put them in a cage and let them, you know, sort out their differences. This is the best case scenario, I think. I think it works, and it works great for the like chicken shit heel who is been avoiding the face for as long as possible, put him in a cage so they can't run away anymore.
Yeah.
These are like the top two, but again, how you work with it, you can always find exceptions to the rule that work as well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's something that's used a lot if there's people in a determined or not determined series of matches. Like, it's good as a rubber match. Like,
yeah.
Tyler beat me the first time, I beat Tyler the second time. Well, then we gotta settle it in the cage.
Give me my rubber match, Kenny.
Yeah, exactly. I think it also, it works really well when you have people with differing physical styles and statures. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, I think it's the best gimmick match to put a David versus Goliath type story into. Like, I know that there are some good cage matches with Rey Mysterio and The Big Show. And, like, it makes sense if there is a escape clause enacted in there, that if you have one person who is so physically imposing that it's terrifying to be locked in a room with them, and but you can climb really fast and get out of there. Like, that's that always makes the storytelling of the match itself easy. But I think you're right that, like, if it's not the end of a feud, a cage match feels really unearned. It's like, to give like an action movie analysis, right? There's like the really big set piece in an action movie around the climax, but not the climax yet. Where like in Black Panther, there's like 800 people fighting against each other in armies in the like tundra of Wakanda, right? And that's like the most impressive action packed thing, but that'd be more like a TLC match in wrestling, I feel like.
Yeah.
And the part of Black Panther where it's just on that like weird road thing, that where Warmonger and
Killmonger.
Where Michael B. Jordan and Black Panther are fighting one on one to be like the end of the movie. That is what a cage match should be.
Yeah.
And for that reason too, I'm not a fan of long cage matches. Like the AEW Cody Wardlow one was the perfect timing for me, because like if you're being forced to be put in a cage and you hate each other that much, like there shouldn't be anything stopping you from killing each other.
Yeah. I agree with that. And honestly, in retrospect, like, you know, famous cage matches I remember watching, I can't think whether or not they lasted a really long time, but I would assume that they didn't, just again for a match like that that's going to be such a toll physically on your body. You're going to want to try to keep, you know, have a couple big spots, but don't drag it out too long.
Yeah, there's very of the matches that we are pegged to talk about, there are very few that are longer than 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So there are two more cage matches that are coming up on TV shortly, because WWE has responded to AEW's cage match by booking two more.
Of course they did.
On NXT in 2 weeks, we have Tegan Nox versus Dakota Kai. And then at the Super Showdown, in a place that, in a country that WWE won't talk about, we have Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin. Do those work? Do those storylines warrant a cage match to you? And if so, why?
Something about Baron Corbin and Roman does. And I would say it's, for this specific one, it's not a case of like a heel trying to evade the face, or even because it's such like a heated rivalry. This lies into the idea of other people getting in the way.
Yeah.
Throughout their feud, we have had Dolph and Bobby Roode showing up to get in the way. We've had the Usos showing up to get in the way. This is a great way to put the two individuals in a ring alone without the possibility of interference. Now, of course, there's always the possibility of interference, but this is a great staple for those, I think.
Even if there is interference, it's a nice juxtaposition to their last match, which was a falls count anywhere, right? So it was literally like, let's fight everywhere, and they did. They went all over the arena.
Yeah.
So I think it's a nice rebound, but it better be the final match in their storyline. I don't think there's anywhere for them to go.
You don't think this is going to Mania?
It might.
Corbin versus Roman at Mania? Good Lord.
I don't know. In a regular match.
Yeah.
The Tegan Nox Dakota Kai also feels like the correct mm-hmm. next logical step for them, because they've been in a street fight. They've been mm-hmm. interfering in each other's matches. It's and been...
They just added... I don't remember her name, but the Dakota Kai's heater in at TakeOver to get into the picture as well. Mm-hmm. So
I think those could actually both be pretty good. I mm-hmm. feel like we know that Roman in cages or cells has tend to been pretty good in the past.
Yeah.
Why is it we mentioned at the top that cage matches are something that's as synonymous with pro wrestling to non-pro wrestling fans as like Hulk Hogan, right? As like headlock, powerbomb.
Yeah.
Why is the cage match so endearing? And like, do you have favorite? Here's where we can talk about Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Do you have favorite moments of the cage transcending pop culture?
I mean, number one is gotta be Bonesaw.
Bonesaw McGraw.
Bonesaw is ready. Mm-hmm. For our Spider-Man fans out there, if you guys remember the first Spider-Man film starring Tobey Maguire that came out in, I want to say 2003?
One, two, three?
2003.
Sam Raimi? Yeah.
Sam Raimi, yeah. There's a brief scene where the Amazing Spider-Man, to make some money, agrees to do a professional wrestling match. And it is with none other than Bonesaw, portrayed by the late, great Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah. And Bruce Campbell is the ring announcer, which is pretty great.
Oh, my God. Yes, well. He is.
Because he's the one who gives him the name Spider-Man. Cause he's like, I'm the human spider.
The human spider?
That sucks.
What a good movie.
I think that is what people think of a lot when they hear a cage match, if they're not mm-hmm. adept at pro wrestling, which is funny too, because the match starts as a normal match and then turns into a cage match, and mm-hmm. the sides of the cage, which I guess are just like at ringside, are kind of just like pulled up. It's bizarre. I would love to see an actual cage match designed that way.
That starts that way with the cage enveloping them.
Yeah. So that's a really popular one. I tend to think that even if it's not a traditional cage match, that it touches on the same really basic storytelling technique from the beginning of time as like a gladiator fight does, mm-hmm. right? So I think when you look at a gladiator, they're in a pit that they can't mm-hmm. get out of.
Yeah.
It's like it's less about the physical cage being there, but anytime that you see someone who is bound to a place in a fight,
yes,
it's a cage match.
No, the element of escape is removed.
I think of Luke Skywalker versus the Rancor mm-hmm. in Return of the Jedi. Like, that's a cage match.
Yep.
That might actually be in a cage. I think of the very famous Star Trek episode where Kirk and is it Kirk and Spock or is it Kirk and Bones?
I'm gonna be honest, this is a you question.
It's not really, this is a Jared Murray question.
Or we need to call old friend of the podcast Matt Schott and see if he knows.
I know that there's a really like the most popular episode of the original Star Trek has two of the it's Kirk and one of the other people fighting mm-hmm. with these like scepters in for this alien race in a pit, having to fight to the death.
Okay.
It's parodied in The Cable Guy at Medieval Times. And then in the new Star Trek, they redid this episode, not the new movie, but like one of the other TV series. They redid this episode with The Rock guest starring as the person that he had to fight against. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's a mistake. I think it's because, again, we understand this story, the language of this story and storytelling so much that we associate the cage match with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And if you think that that's all BS, well then we also have UFC and MMA as a whole adopting this idea that has continued to beat into your head that the cage match is a more brutal way of fighting.
Yes.
Because I think it's like, Can you imagine MMA being as popular as it is today, Tyler, if, let's say, Pride Fighting Championships had outlasted UFC? Because they fought in a boxing ring.
They fought
ring.
In a ring, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly. I think this is kind of besides the point, but I think a lot of the appeal of UFC is the real factor of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the at this point, the cage is definitely iconic. If it had just been in a boxing ring, like, you know, boxing matches and pride fights and things like that, I don't think it would be the same. You would have like the same personalities, maybe, like your Conor McGregors and your Ronda Rouseys, who could, you know, propel the sport forward. But it was unique. That's the cage is this uniqueness, this idea of being different from everything else.
Yeah. I agree with that. I do think it made it, like, in the initial UFC pay-per-view, it made people turn their head to be like, yeah, you want to see cage fighting?
But also, think, like, yeah. That initial one, like, that cage was more akin to, like, the cage from this 1930s one that was made by chicken wire and
yes,
shit.
It looked a lot like that. I can watch MMA. There's a time where I was watching a lot of UFC. I don't recommend going back and watching the first UFC because there are no weight classes and it's unregulated.
There are no rules.
It is the most brutal, disgusting
and a 150-pound dude, Hoist Gracie, still ends up beating everyone.
Yeah. Frank Shamrock is in that. Or it's not Frank. Ken Shamrock is in that tournament as well. I just know that the Hawaiian guy... there are many Hawaiian guys in forgetting Sarah Marshall, but it's the very big Hawaiian guy who like works at the hotel, who's like, are these happy tissues or sad tissues? He's in the very first UFC fight as the like the sumo wrestler, and he gets his shit rocked quickly by a like Dutch kickboxer.
Ouch.
And it ends in like 10 seconds and he loses a bunch of teeth, and they're like, and the commentators are like, okay.
welcome to
UFC. Okay. Yeah, but I think they owe a lot of their identity and brutality to being in a cage. So speaking of brutal cage matches, because that's really what a cage match is about. It's visceral. It's about anyone can be an animal if they're caged, right?
Absolutely.
What is your favorite cage match ever, Tyler? Putting you on the spot.
Oh, God. Man, that's a tough one. All right, favorite cage match ever is most likely Chris Benoit versus Kurt Angle.
Yeah, that's a great one. Or as it would be listed on the WWE Network, Kurt Angle versus someone in a cage match.
Kurt Angle in a cage match.
Yeah, so this was on an episode of Raw in 2001. Mm-hmm. Stone Cold Steve Austin was on commentary for this match.
Wow, didn't know that
one. I believe he was. Why is this your favorite cage match of all time, Tyler?
This is my favorite cage match because it's two of some of my favorite wrestlers of all time. As controversial as that is now.
Mm-hmm. Not your favorite people of all time.
Not my favorite people, my favorite wrestlers.
This was also on the June 11th episode of Raw in 2001, if you're trying to go back and watch on the network.
Yes. It was just, when I think of cage matches, like, this is one of the ones that had those memorable spots that you see on highlight reels all the time that always harken back to it. You'll never see Benoit's highlights anymore, of course, but there was, besides the big highlight of Kurt missing the moonsault off the top of the cage, there's also the spot where Benoit would do his diving headbutt, but he did it from the top of the cage and also missed.
Yeah. So a lot of impact to those guys' heads and necks.
Yeah, yeah. But so, like, that's those big moments like that were things you remember when thinking about, like, favorite cage matches. Honestly, it's hard for me to remember the matches, but I remember moments.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Jeff Hardy hitting a whisper in the wind off the top and coming down. I remember, you know, Benoit doing the headbutt, Kurt Angle hitting the moonsault, things like that.
I remember Rey Mysterio debuting on SmackDown in the early 2000s after a match was over. He's not even in the match officially, but he climbs up a cage to mm-hmm. get in to save somebody in the cage and does a crossbody off of it onto like Lance Storm and Christian, I think. Yeah. And that is like stuck in my head forever because that was my first time ever seeing Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like it's hard to differentiate the spots from the match, but mm-hmm. I think there are a few where the match maybe as a whole is something to like really look at. Mm-hmm. But quickly, before we move off of your favorite cage match ever, we talked, when we were talking about the rules, about how hard it is to make like walking through the cage door effective. And this match does it because it you know, you have Chris Benoit crawling because he's in so much pain, crawling mm-hmm. to the door, which is opened by the ref, and Kurt Angle puts him in the ankle lock. Like that is mm-hmm. one situation where it actually like is compelling.
Yeah.
Because the move that Kurt employs actually prohibits people from crawling. Mm-hmm. So that's one time where the door works. I can give you 100 times where it doesn't. when I think of and this was a great match all around, but we remember one moment of it. When I think of a moment in a cage match, I think of Triple X. Who people don't remember Triple X, but they were a tag team in early TNA. And I think of their cage match against America's Most Wanted, who was a tag team of James Storm and Chris Harris. Mm-hmm. And this was at Turning Point 2004 in a six-sided steel cage. You know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Elix Skipper.
I don't think he's original Primetime, but he's Primetime I know.
Primetime Elix Skipper. And Christopher Daniels is the other member of Triple X in this match, mm-hmm. not Low-Key, I think. What a weird threesome that is.
I know, right?
but yeah, Elix Skipper does something that I think is, mm-hmm. you know, apologies to Mick Foley is maybe the most dangerous thing I've seen in a wrestling match.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know we've talked about it before, and I know we implored you to look it up previously, mm-hmm. but I really can't stress enough how you should really look this up. Yeah,
there's a GIF of it included in our glossary on our website.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. It's honestly, to this day, it's still one of the most incredible cage spots I think I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly happens, Tyler?
Elix Skipper... tightrope walks across the top of the cage, and I say tightrope because if you've seen cage matches recently, like even the cage match we just saw last night on AEW, the top of their cage is a pretty wide base.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a lot of room for footing to, you know, get your bearings and stuff and actually balance yourself. I'd say it's probably a good maybe like at least 6 inches thick or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
This cage was not that. This nope. cage was like the cage, like the chain link fence that would surround a public school. And
it's what's around a tennis court at your local rec center.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It was very thin, and like the top of it was such. And
it was Elix rounded. It wasn't flat. It was like a rounded pipe.
It was a rounded cage, yeah. And Elix Skipper, I mean, I'd say he tightroped, balance walked a good 5 or 6 feet on that mm-hmm. thing.
One panel of a hexagon.
To walk across the whole panel to hit Chris Harris with a Hurricane Rana from the top. It was, God, it's beautiful. Just beautiful.
Logically, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, like why Chris Harris would be hanging up up there. But it doesn't matter. Because it's the most... There are a million ways it could have gone wrong, and it's already starting to go wrong.
So many.
Because he is leaning backwards a few steps.
Yeah, you see, like 2 steps in, he starts to lean, luckily towards the ring and not towards the outside.
Yeah.
But you can see that he's starting to fall.
Mm-hmm. That is, like, it's too bad that that's all that we will remember Elix Skipper as. But that is, like, one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my life. You know,
yes.
Not even, like, in category wrestling,
just in athletics in general.
So those are some of the most death-defying things we've seen in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Are there any cage matches that you would say are, like, the most important?
Yeah, there's a lot of important cage matches. One of, I mean, definitely the first one that came to mind was Brett versus Owen.
Yeah, that's a great match.
That's too. A great match in general. I of these like historic cage matches, I think of that's the one I watched most recently. I want to say I watched it last year or something, just randomly. Yeah. But that's just a great match in general. I mean, two of the all time best, Owen Hart and Bret Hart, going at it.
A literal blood feud, in that they are brothers, and that really works for the cage match as well.
Yeah, and it worked for the story. My favorite part, honestly, of the whole match is at the end when I think Owen is like beating down Brett, and the rest of the Hart family that are surrounding the cage are trying to get in. So they're like climbing the outside. And
there's a really, really nice and the two of them are amazing storytellers, and that's what set them apart in their era as wrestlers, in that they revolved their entire storyline around legs and breaking legs, because the whole thing is that the storyline starts with they're in a match together and Brett trips and hurts his leg, and Owen tries to help him and gets like pinned, and they lose the match because of that. And then after that, Brett like legit like has his leg beaten, it like not legit kayfabe, like broken in the ring by Owen, and then months later Brett gets his match with him in the cage, and throughout the match Owen is working the leg, he's getting in the camera space and screaming, I'm gonna break his leg, and then it is what causes Owen to lose the match too, that Owen goes for a move and jumps and gets his leg caught in the cage, and then like can't stop Brett from escaping. And I think that is like, oh, what a nice little bow to have on it, to have on the whole story.
Absolutely.
They also, they really understand, part of a critique of modern cage matches is that it is just, how do we get to Elix Skipper walking on the top of the cage, right? Like I said, there's not much logic. Anytime that there's a big move in this match, it is because it's someone actively preventing someone else from winning the match. Like, I love Owen getting over the top of the cage and Brett pulling him back in by his hair. And I love, like, the backdrop off of the cage. Like, there's, like, everything has a real purpose in that match, which I really like. I'd also say, and probably, like, the match that I'm sure the old-timers listening to this podcast are fuming that we have not talked about yet, is the original high spot in wrestling, I think, is Jimmy Snuka.
You're talking about Superfly?
I'm talking about Superfly, there who also go. Is someone who maybe has murdered his family.
Who maybe.
We've mentioned this any time that we mentioned Jimmy Snuka on this show.
Yeah, that's true.
But Jimmy Snuka, Don Morocco, for the IC title at Madison Square Garden in 1983. Snuka climbs to the top of the cage and dives off it, and he's the first person to do this.
To ever do so.
Yeah.
And it changed the business.
It blew people's minds, because then so many impressionable young people watched and went, wait, I can jump off of stuff and not die?
Wait, you can jump off things?
Yeah. In fact, Mick Foley, notable person who jumps off things, said this about the match. I'm going to put on the quotation marks. I'm not going to do a Mick Foley impersonation, though.
Oh.
Had it not been for this moment in time. It's actually not that bad. I didn't know if you still had the soundboard with you.
Oh, of course I do, man.
Had it not been for this moment in time in October 1983, it's highly unlikely that I would have created any moments at all within the world of professional wrestling. Jimmy Snuka created that moment for me, a moment that was about so much more than just an athletic dive from the top of a cage. It was professional wrestling as art, and Snuka that night was the consummate artist. Painting on his own unique canvas in the most famous arena in the world, he painted with his body language, his intensity, his facial expressions, especially with those eyes, so that the slightest glance to the top of the cage created a literal buzz among the 20,000 people in attendance, like a fuse being lit, leading to a powder keg of anticipation, resulting in the rarest of explosions, A crowd pops so loud and emotional that all I need to do is close my eyes and I can hear it all over again. As real to me now as it was that night at the Garden over 30 years ago. End quote.
Mm.
So I'm going to give a weird comp for this match in the world of art. I think because now, like, a dive from a tall place is something we've seen a million times.
Yeah.
I think that this match is the Citizen Kane of wrestling.
Ooh,
and
okay.
That it, like, originated a bunch of techniques that were necessary to the progression of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And people know that it's, like, really good and heralded as a classic, but I think a lot of people haven't seen it. And maybe, like, wouldn't know that it is that great.
Yeah, I think, I mean, personally, I've never seen the match, but I've definitely seen that iconic, you know, image of Snuka diving off the cage, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we should go back and watch that, or not support somebody who maybe killed his.
Maybe not. We'll think about that. But
I will
you can see the YouTube clip. I don't think that's directly supporting him.
I will say I want you all to go on the network and watch my favorite cage match, and this is like a really old one. This was 2 years later. This is at Starrcade 1985. It's a very dark arena. It's like the Greensboro Coliseum, I think. It's very smoky and dark in there. this is Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard, who is the father of Tessa Blanchard.
Yep.
In a I Quit cage match. So this is a gimmick on top of a gimmick. Have you seen this match, Tyler?
I have not.
Okay.
Enlighten me.
It's 15 minutes. There's two wrestling moves in it. There's a gorilla press. And there's, like, a elbow drop, like a standing elbow drop.
Mm-hmm.
I think that happens twice. That's about it. This was a, like, Tully was in the Horsemen at this time, and he caused Magnum TA to lose his NWA United States Heavyweight title, and they hate each other so much that they have to be locked in a cage.
Of course.
This is,
as you do,
the most violent non-hardcore wrestling match I've ever seen in my life.
Wow,
they beat the living shit out of each other. it's all punches. They immediately are both gassed like 2 minutes into it. So it is a match where people are just rolling around. There's blood immediately. And maybe it's because it's in the South. Maybe it's because there's a lot of like hair and grainy footage and stuff. This is like watching the movie Deliverance to me, and that. Because it's an I Quit match, and I think it's a very young Earl Hebner who's the referee in this match too. They have this like this mic that is on its cord and is live, and neither of these guys understand about decibels. So anytime that one of the guys thinks that they are like close to making the other guy quit by like putting him in a headlock, they get the mic in there, and these guys just scream. And they're like, no, no, no. And it is terrifying. I love it. It's really great. And then when they do say no, the effect of then hitting the person in the head with the mic creates such a great feedback sound. Mm-hmm. Like it's such a, you're not going to see it anywhere else where like the production value is bad to a point that really enhances it.
Yeah.
It also has a legit, really violent ending where a chair is thrown into the ring for Tully Blanchard to use. And it's a wooden chair, and he breaks the chair so that there's just a leg of the chair with a sharp, pointy end, and he tries to stab Magnum TA to death. He ends up getting the stake in his hand and then starts gouging out Tully Blanchard's eye, and that is what makes him quit. The Starrcade 1985 I Quit match is more violent than anything you'll see on WWE TV today. Highly recommend it.
It is wicked.
Yeah. It's only 15 minutes as well. So, like, no one has any reason not to watch it. It's really good. those were kind of the most famous ones. We could also talk about Bruno Sammartino versus Larry Zbysko at the Showdown at Shea. That was kind of WrestleMania before WrestleMania for WWF. I've seen images of this one a lot, of like the ring with the cage in the middle of a baseball stadium that's full. It looks very bizarre. It's also interesting. I had never realized that Bruno had already kind of stopped wrestling at that point. That Larry was his protege, and they had Larry turn on him, and Bruno was like, "I'm coming back to like teach you,
a lesson. Teach you some manners, boy."
Yeah. So I think that that's a really interesting wrestling event in general to watch, because like that is the passing of a wrestling torch, and in the undercard, we have a young Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant is on that show as well.
That's wild.
We didn't mention a whole lot of matches from the 2010s, talking about cage matches. In fact, we didn't mention any of them.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Why hasn't there been an era defining cage match for recently?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question right there. I think the cage match when, take the Attitude Era, for example, it was about pushing the envelope and kind of, giving people things they hadn't really seen before. And granted, of course, cage matches had been around for many years. The Attitude Era was the first time that we had, cable television access weekly to professional wrestling. And I think that it was more common. You would see cage matches on Raw and things like that, where they seem to do it very sparingly now, which could be argued that's not necessarily a bad thing. You don't want to overdo your good gimmick matches like that, but I don't know. I don't have an answer for that one.
Yeah. It's weird. I think they happen way less, maybe just because there are so many other matches that have cages in them, like we talked about.
Sure.
War Games, Elimination Chamber, Hell in a Cell. I don't know if it's maybe also too that like the strengths of an athletic body of a modern wrestler are better suited for gimmick matches like ladder matches. You mentioned that there's more TV, so it's harder to do these long storylines that warrant a cage match. So maybe I guess like the last one I can think of before this AEW one that like really sticks out in my mind is Lita versus Trish Stratus in a cage match, because that was also like the first time women main evented Raw. But yeah, I remember it because it was a first rather than for the match itself. So I don't know. I'm maybe Tegan Nox versus Dakota Kai, or Roman versus
era-defining cage match.
Yeah, we'll see. They got the bar set by Wardlow and Cody, so curious to see how they take it.
If they end it with a moonsault off the top, I'm in. I'm down.
If Roman wants to try that, I don't think there's any way that happens.
No, probably not.
We have a little bit of time left. I think we have enough time to hop in the Kayfabe 520 if you can get it running quickly.
Oh, we always got time for that, my man.
That's not true.
That's false. That's Kayfabe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, let's hop on in. I'm going to get her turned on, and we'll see what we can pull out of this thing.
All righty. Oh, everything is so blue and made out of steel in here this time.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
that's but you know what they say, Andrew.
What do they say?
What it is what it is.
So the soundboard made it into the Kayfabe 520?
No, Macho Man Randy Savage made it in.
Oh my gosh, Macho Man! I'm so sorry, I didn't even see you there.
Didn't recognize you.
Yeah, without.
But we got some questions here, and by God, we got some answers as well.
Yeah, do you want to start us off?
Absolutely. Look, if you're in a cage match, how would you, Andrew Terrence Caberline, try to win? Would you win through pin, escape through the door, go over the top? What are you thinking?
I would do none of those. Instead, I would try to burrow my way into the ground through the bottom of the ring.
Oh, you're going down.
Yeah, everyone goes up, but if you go up, you know, you must come down. So why don't I just start going down to begin with? So I would try to, like, you know, be like Peter Rabbit, and
I don't hate that. See, yeah. You got to work exactly. You got to start going up to go down. I might climb to the top of the cage, maybe hit a double foot stomp in dead center of the ring, hoping to bust through, perhaps.
Oh yeah, but you don't want to go too far, or else you'd be in China. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. And Kane's probably hiding down there somewhere.
Yeah, Kane or Bray Wyatt could be down there. I'm pretty sure Bam Bam Bigelow's been there since Taz fell on him. And yeah, Tyler, what can be done to repair the once again strained relationship between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano?
These guys, I swear. I don't know. I mean, at this point, we have seen their tumultuous relationship unfold and refold and unfold again. And I don't know. I think these guys need a real bonding moment, but I think they need to realize that they need each other. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking some sort of like team survival-esque Survivor Series kind of thing. Not to say an actual Survivor Series, but you know what I mean.
You want them to be in the television series Survivor, is what you're saying.
Ah, see, it took the words right out of my mouth. Exactly. Are there a team-oriented Survivor here? Because if Ciampa can realize that he needs Johnny Gargano, and that Johnny Gargano can realize that he needs Tommaso Ciampa, I think we could finally mend this bridge.
They occasionally do Survivor where you play with a loved one, but I think they might be more suited to be on like The Amazing Race. I think that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yes, yeah. I like this as well.
Yeah,
brilliant. But look, you see, Andrew, a lot of new champions over this past week in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Lots happened. What to you was the most impressive?
Oh, man. I always love when a tag team comes together who weren't together originally, like the Broserweights.
The Broserweights are.
But I think Nyla Rose was the most impressive to me. I think that we were all kind of thinking, like, who is Rio going to face at Revolution?
Right,
and we look past our opponent, and you can't do that, especially with a warrior like Nyla Rose.
Yeah, the native beast, you're absolutely right.
It's someone who told us that she was going to be champion from day one, and we didn't believe her. And when we thought that she was down and out, she came back in and kind of broke our hearts. So I'm really impressed, and I want to see what Nyla Rose is going to do in her reign.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree.
Mm-hmm. Here's a really important question, Tyler. It turns out that recently Angelo Dawkins stole Cedric Alexander's suitcase on a flight to Orlando. Dawkins claims that this was an accident. Was it? Or was there some sort of competitive advantage to be gained by stealing another competitor's luggage?
Now look here. I'm certainly not one to point fingers here. I can't make the assessment that maybe Angelo Dawkins took Cedric Alexander's suitcase on purpose, but I do know the competitive advantages of your opponent not having their gear. Cedric Alexander, he's a high flyer. He does a lot of flips and dives in that ring. And that's going to be really hard to do if you don't have the proper footwear for it, the proper knee pads for it. I'm just saying.
So does that mean that Matt Riddle just had his luggage stolen a long time ago and he's never bothered to get new luggage or buy new shoes?
I think so. See, he strikes me as a man of principle, and it's the principle that someone took the stuff rather than just replacing it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. He's kind of like the Big Lebowski in that way, and no other ways that I can think of.
no other way.
No other similarities they have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, speaking of NXT and NXT title matches, you know, there's been a trend as of late of people kicking out of finishing moves, Andrew. Mm-hmm. What's going on with that? What's allowing this to happen with such unprecedented frequency?
You know, I think that people in NXT are students, right? They're in the performance center. They're being taught. And if you're a real student of the game, you're watching footage of your competitor to try to learn what he does. And people are probably just only focusing on the finishing moves because they're like, well, that's what finishes the match.
Oh, you think they're fast-forwarding the tapes?
Well, I think people are like scouting that out and worrying so much about the finishers that when they do happen, they know how to come to and like get their breath or like take it in a way that doesn't take the full impact out of them. So it's because people are kind of overstudying for the finisher that suddenly those aren't as impactful, I think.
Yeah, perhaps.
All right, we got time for one more question here for you.
All right, bring it on.
Professor Ward, how has the seemingly dysfunctional team of Hangman, Page, and Kenny Omega been able to consistently win against a slew of tried and true tag teams?
You know, that's a very good question. You know, Kenny Omega and Hangman Page are a fairly fresh tag team, fresh pairing, but they're doing quite well. They've retained those AEW tag titles, I think, multiple times now.
They defeated the Lucha Bros and a number of other teams too.
Teams as well. I'm not sure how they're doing it. We know Hangman has been hitting the bottle a little hard recently. But for all we know, this could be a drunken master situation, you know? Maybe we have yet to see Hangman's true potential. Once we get him, you know, properly sloshed enough, we might see him hit that next level.
I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, but on this podcast, I think that Hangman Page directly told us that he was a fan of Drunken Master. I think that is a part of the interview in the very first episode in our feed. If he didn't, he mentioned that his wrestling persona when he was a young child wrestling in the backyard was Uncle Drunkle Jerry. So I think maybe I'm just piecing this together now that maybe he just is rehashing the first character that he ever played. So I know that kind of, I feel like we're already coming into our landing, so I kind of went out of kayfabe there.
But it
struck me that I think I need to go back and listen to that.
That's excellent.
Well, we're not going to top that.
No.
Should we get out of here?
Yeah, we should probably hop on out.
Put that cigarette out.
It's still real to me, damn it.
We will ban you from the Summerfest.
You'll be banned from SummerSlam is what you're saying.
SummerSlam.
I slammed out.
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?
Oh, my God!
All right. What a landing. I'm just high off of the feeling that we actually...
we'll have to go back and listen. That would be so wild.
I know. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was his character, and he was like a guy who just dresses, or like not dresses, just wrestles like he's drunk.
Yeah. If you, I don't have a Twitter besides ours, but like, if you want to like tag him in a post and be like, you're just rehashing drunk, like Uncle Drunk.
No, I'm actually more inclined to like text Stevie and be like, hey,
hey man, are you rehashing Uncle Drunk right now?
Oh, that's great.
That's so great.
Well, that's going to do it for us this episode. We're going to come in under an hour and a half, which we were both kind of shocked about when we were looking at how much we had to talk about for this episode. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I do, actually. We got some things going on.
Yeah.
So first thing, we have finally done it. We have finally booked some studio time to go record that second album that I've told you been working on for about a year now or so now. So that's going to be happening in April. We do have some shows coming up as well. Next week, if you're going to be in the Richmond, Virginia area, we are going to be playing for the Richmond Rockfest RVA, I think is what it's called. We'll be at Another Round Bar and Grill. You can find them on Facebook. You can find the event and everything there. We'd love to see you there. If anyone comes out and you tell me you came from the podcast, I'll buy you a beer.
Hey, look at that.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm extending that to you as well, because like you already know. But yeah. I'd love to see you there.
when you're the person who tells Tyler that, say it as loud as you can, so that a bunch of random people just start coming up and also trying to pull that trick. Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it.
I'm gonna plug something. It's not my own, but this is for our dear friend of the pod and my partner in life, Chelsea Rugg. She wrote, directed, and edited a stop motion short film this last year called Chapped, about his and her chapsticks who were separated by a imposing obstacle, a full size bed. And it's a stop motion sweet little movie, and it's going to be in the DC Independent Film Festival. So if you go down to Richmond first, you get your free beer from Tyler.
Absolutely.
And then you drive up to DC, and Chapped is going to be screening on Sunday, March 8th at noon at the Carnegie Institution for Science, which is a place that screens films. That's going to be part of the DC Independent Film Festival's ACE Animation Block. So you can Google DC Independent Film Festival, and you'll find how to get tickets and all that.
Nice. Yeah,
so check out Chapped.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
And then we got this podcast. So as a reminder, if you want us to answer your questions in the Kayfabe 520, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can email them to us directly at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. Tyler, as always, I'm going to leave you in the words of the immortal William Shakespeare, "If wrestling be the food of love, fight on." I'm hoping that you have something on the soundboard that maybe will be fun to let us out with.
All hail the Ayatollah of rock and roll!
Well, there you have it.
There it is.
Thank you.